Welcome to HN Pod, your daily deep dive into the top stories and discussions from Hacker News. I am Sarah, and alongside me is Mike.
Hey, everyone.
Today is Sunday, June 21st, 2026, and this is episode 433. We are covering the best of yesterday's front page, and we have a really fantastic lineup today. We are looking at a fully playable version of Quake rendered entirely in CSS, a mind-bending article about the colors your screen literally cannot show you, a pretty infuriating story about AI plagiarism, a website crammed into a tiny favicon, and the UK government's latest attempt to somehow age-gate VPNs.
I love days like this. We have got pure hacker ingenuity on one hand, and then massive structural web and policy issues on the other. It is the quintessential Hacker News mix.
It really is. Let's start with the ingenuity. A user named M. Salsas posted CSS Quake, which got almost 500 points. It is exactly what it sounds like. It is a multiplayer port of Quake, but the 3D rendering pipeline is powered entirely by CSS.
I clicked on this expecting some sort of trick, like maybe a canvas element being manipulated. But no, it uses something called poly-CSS. The game logic is written in TypeScript, which extracts the original Quake engine facts, but the actual visual output on your screen is just a massive, absurdly complex DOM tree using CSS 3D transforms to draw the polygons. You can open the browser inspector and literally select individual walls and floor tiles as HTML elements.
Which is just a glorious abuse of web standards. But the Hacker News comment section immediately zeroed in on the performance. User Jedberg pointed out the ultimate irony, saying that Quake ran smoother on their Pentium 133 PC back in the 90s than it runs right now on their modern Apple M1 Pro.
That sparked a hilarious debate about optimization. Someone rightly pointed out that CSS is essentially a general document rendering solution, not a 3D game engine. My favorite comment was from a user named Cooley, who said, "Decades of optimizing a toaster to make better toast will not make the toaster any better at making meatloaf."
That meatloaf analogy is perfect. Another user countered that an AI IoT smart air fryer should technically make a great meatloaf, but the point stands. It is like forcing a tool to do something it was fundamentally never designed to do, just to prove you can. And honestly, the fact that it runs at all, let alone with multiplayer and dynamic lighting, is a massive testament to web browsers today.
Speaking of forcing web technologies to do things they were never meant to do, let us talk about our next story. A developer named Tim Wehrle posted an article called "I Stored a Website in a Favicon."
I loved this one. It feels like classic old-school internet hacking. So a favicon is just that tiny little icon in your browser tab. Tim realized that a favicon is an image. An image is made of pixels, and pixels are just bytes of data. Specifically, every pixel has a red, green, and blue value, which gives you 3 bytes per pixel.
Right, so he took a tiny HTML payload, converted the text into UTF-8 bytes, and just wrote those bytes directly into the RGB channels of an image. To the browser, it looks like a tiny square of visual static. But with a tiny bit of JavaScript, he reads the image onto a canvas, extracts the RGB values, decodes them back into text, and boom, the browser renders a website that it pulled out of its own favicon.
The craziest part to me was the size. His payload was 208 bytes of HTML. With a 4-byte header to tell the script when to stop reading, the whole thing fit into a 9x9 pixel square. That is 81 pixels total. It is actually smaller than a standard favicon.
The Hacker News comments on this were great because everyone immediately started suggesting other ways to do it. User Tepix pointed out that since modern browsers support SVG favicons, you could just embed the HTML directly inside the SVG markup and extract it that way. Others mentioned using PNG comment chunks.
But my favorite takeaway from the comments was the darker side of this. A user named Sheep brought up that the favicon cache has actually been used as a vector for tracking and fingerprinting users across domains, sometimes even bypassing incognito mode. It's a fun hack when Tim does it to store a tiny blog post, but it's a reminder of how every single crevice of the browser can be weaponized by ad tech.
Absolutely. Okay, let us shift gears from the digital world to the physical one. Our next story is a fascinating piece by Ryan Molden called "Where to Find the Colors Your Screen Can't Show You." It got over 400 points and really sparked my imagination.
This article is basically a deep dive into color theory and the biological limits of our eyes versus the technological limits of our screens. Ryan explains that our eyes have 3 types of cone cells.
they do not actually see specific wavelengths of light. They just yell at our brains at different volumes, depending on the light hitting them.
Right. And screen manufacturers figured out early on that if they could just stimulate those three cones independently using red, green, and blue light, they could trick the brain into seeing most colors. But the key word there is most. Because of the physical limitations of the phosphors used in old CRT monitors, a standard was created called the sRGB color space, and we are largely still stuck with it today across the web.
The problem is, sRGB misses a huge chunk of the visible spectrum, specifically in the cyan and vivid green areas. Ryan points out that if you want to see these colors, you literally have to go outside. He gives two incredible examples. One is standing in a maple forest at noon in the summer. When sunlight passes through multiple layers of leaves, it gets purified and concentrated into a green that is so intense it cannot be captured by a standard digital camera or displayed on a normal monitor.
The other example is deep water. Water absorbs red light aggressively. If you add green phytoplankton to the mix and dive down, the ambient light becomes an unrepresentable hypersaturated cyan. Underwater photographers actually have to use special filters to block out blue light just so their camera sensors do not completely clip and lose all the detail.
The Hacker News discussion added some really great nuance to this. A user named Adrian B. pointed out that while it is true sRGB misses those deep cyans, human vision actually struggles to distinguish a lot of colors in that specific blue-green area anyway. They argued that the real tragedy of sRGB is that it cannot reproduce saturated oranges, reds, and purples.
Yeah, Adrian B. made the point that we encounter those warm colors every single day in things like fruit, flowers, and clothing. When you watch a movie mastered in a wider color space like Rec 2020 on a good display, those reds and oranges look incredibly lifelike, whereas the missing greens really only matter if you are watching a nature documentary about exotic tree frogs. It's a great reminder to check if your monitor supports Display P3 and make sure it's actually turned on.
Definitely checking my monitor settings after this. All right, moving on to a much more frustrating story. Andy Bio wrote a piece on waxy.org titled "The Wholesale Plagiarism of Obscure Sorrows."
This one makes my blood boil. So John Koenig has spent over a decade running a beautiful project called the Dictionary of Obscure Sorrows. He invents words for complex human emotions that don't have names yet. His most famous invention is the word sonder, which is the realization that every random passerby is living a life as vivid and complex as your own. That word became so popular, it actually made it into the dictionary.
He eventually got a book deal and hit the New York Times bestseller list. But recently, a polished new website popped up. It had his bio, press links, and the entire text of his book. But all of his original artwork was stripped out and replaced with terrible, glitchy DALL-E AI images. They also added an AI generator so users could make their own words.
And here is the kicker. John had absolutely nothing to do with it. A San Francisco marketing agency called Contour, formerly Prompt Digital, just ripped off his entire life's work to use as a portfolio piece to show off their Webflow and AI skills. They even slapped their own Amazon affiliate links on the buy buttons to make money off his book sales.
It is just so brazen. They put a copyright notice at the bottom claiming the user-generated stuff was public domain, which shows they have no idea how copyright actually works. And because of how broken search engines are right now, this bootleg site actually outranks John's official site and his publisher on Google. Even ChatGPT and Gemini cite the fake site as the official one.
The Hacker News thread was full of creators sharing similar nightmares. A user named M. Oliver talked about spending 3 years building a free app to help people, only to have a thief steal the code, run the text through an AI to rebrand it, and launch it as their own paid app. They said Google and Apple are basically useless for DMCA takedowns unless you have a court order, which costs a fortune.
Exactly. It highlights the core issue with generative AI right now. It is not just that the models are trained on human work without consent, it is that the output is being used to actively bury the original human creators under an avalanche of SEO-optimized slop. Andy Bio put it perfectly in the article. He said he gets emails every day about new websites designed purely to siphon attention away from the people who painstakingly make things for a living.
It is a dark time for independent creators on the web. We really need search engines and platforms to step up their game on provenance and authenticity, because right now the incentives are entirely aligned with the spammers.
Well said. Let us finish up today with some news from the UK that had the Hacker News community collectively rolling its eyes. The UK government is looking at implementing an age gate for VPN use as part of a broader under-16 social media ban.
This is one of those headlines where anyone with even a basic understanding of networking just has to sigh. The technology secretary, Liz Kendall, mentioned that they are looking at options to age restrict or limit children's VPN use because kids are using them to bypass online safety protections.
Which, of course they are. The article mentions that within hours of the social media ban being confirmed, search data showed teenagers across the UK were aggressively Googling how to get around it using VPNs. It is the eternal story of adults trying to digitally fence in teenagers, and the teenagers instantly finding the latter.
The technical absurdity of this is what really got Hacker News talking. A virtual private network is designed specifically to encrypt your traffic and hide what you are doing and who you are. The idea that you could somehow force a VPN provider, many of which are based in privacy-friendly jurisdictions outside the UK, to verify the age of the user before letting them connect is just fundamentally incompatible with what the technology does.
Right. To enforce an age gate on a VPN, the government would essentially have to ban all unapproved VPNs at the ISP level, which requires massive authoritarian-style firewalling. Or they have to force device manufacturers like Apple and Google to block VPN apps at the operating system level for certain accounts. Both options are massive overreaches that break fundamental privacy tools for adults, too.
It is a classic case of policymakers treating technology like magic. They see a social problem, in this case, kids being harmed by social media, and they just demand a technical solution without understanding the architecture of the internet. As one commenter pointed out, the only thing this policy will actually achieve is teaching an entire generation of British teenagers how to become highly proficient network security hackers.
Honestly, never underestimate a teenager who just wants to watch TikTok. They will be setting up their own Shadow Socks proxies on cheap cloud servers by next week.
Without a doubt. And that brings us to the end of today's episode. From rendering Quake in CSS to hiding websites in pixels, and from the colors we cannot see to the AI spam we wish we could not see, it has been a packed show.
Thank you so much for listening to HN Pod. We will be back tomorrow with more of the top stories from Hacker News. Have a great day, everyone.